Right. Okay. I'd like to start by welcoming everybody and ask you a quick question. How many of you have downloaded the developer preview of Windows 8? Quick show of hands. Okay. That's very good. It's very good. It's very exciting to see all this stuff come out of Microsoft. And my presentation today will try and answer one of the questions that I was having as I was watching all the presentations as part of the Build conference. I kept thinking to myself, okay, they're talking to us about all these great applications, all these metro applications, but where are the business applications? And then they said it, you know, business applications strictly desktop mode. Well, we know as developers that's not how things work. Somebody somewhere will require applications which live on metro and which are business applications. So I had this question in my mind, you know, how does my business application make sense in Metro? So that was the motivation for my talk. Right, so first I'll talk about, very briefly, about the situation we had before Metro, how difficult it was to create any application for mobile users. Then I'll present very briefly Metro, the controls and the interaction capabilities it adds to what we already have to enable us to target mobile users using touch interfaces. Then I'll mention some of the scenarios from business applications which make sense to port to Metro-based applications, some of the scenarios which don't port as well to these to this type of applications, some of the implementation specifics, which are important when you start building your Metro applications. Then we'll go through a set of different scenarios, and we'll see how those can be ported into Metro, the controls we can use, and how we can enable the developer to navigate our application, to interact with it in an easier way. And then, and which is my favorite part, we'll do a small case study. We'll port a small business application I've written in WPF to Metro. This will be a non-coding session. Basically, we'll just be reimagining the UI rather than coding the application itself. Right. Okay. So, for a very long time, I personally felt as if Microsoft wasn't giving us the tools to reach out to mobile users. We did have Windows CE, Windows Embedded, Windows Mobile, but nothing that really targeted the touch interaction as well as other platforms did. So I couldn't help but feel that, you know, all the applications I was writing up until, you know, before Metro was announced, that they all target users which use exclusively the keyboard and the mouse. And we were getting all these requests from customers of ours saying, we need to move to these platforms. We need to move to these platforms. What do you have for us? And it was difficult for us to answer that question because the interaction models just weren't there. And it was difficult for us to kind of imagine things differently because for a very long time, the applications that we've all written, they've all targeted high data density. They've all targeted sophisticated controls, grids, docking managers, constructing ever more complicated UI and giving users all the functionality they can imagine all at once. So what we lacked essentially was a development platform to allow us to go from the rich client, and whether you're using a browser or a forms-based application, the situation was the same because the limiting factor was really the keyboard and the mouse, which didn't let us interact with data as richly as we would have liked to. So we lacked the interaction model and the controls. And this is where we couldn't meet the needs of the mobile application user. So what are those needs? Mobile application users need to examine data very quickly because they live in a very interruption-rich environment. It's very natural for you to walk around with a device and for somebody to talk to you, so it doesn't really make sense to be doing something that's very detailed, very involved. So one, they need to view information in one glance. Two, they need to use multiple applications to find, combine, and share data, because nobody really does anything really complicated on these devices. So it's very important to find the data you're looking for, to process it in a very simple way, and to share it with somebody else who can take action on it. Something else that's very important for this platform as well, relevant and updated data. So this is where Metro comes in. And these are some of the problems which Metro seems to solve using the innovative user controls and also the touch interactions which it introduces. So Metro basically is a development platform. It allows us to target touch-based user interfaces. It enables us to build applications for users who are mobile using Windows 8 operating systems. And most importantly, it gives us the templates to do it. Because with WPF, with Silverlight, we did support multi-touch, but it was all custom-based. It was all the developer needing to basically code the interaction themselves. We needed to handle all these events, and everything was custom from the standpoint of the user. So they had no guarantee that interacting with two different applications, they were going to get the same offset when they're pinching, right? Because it's all custom. And one vendor can implement it one way, and another vendor can implement it a different way. So this is something that was lacking, the standardized touch interaction interface, and also the templates. Metro includes templates which let us construct applications which look great right from the start. And I think they emphasized this very well in the conference itself, that it's time to build beautiful applications, because for users which can be interrupted all the time, that really makes a difference. Because you really want to see immediately what you're looking for, rather than dig down a grid control for the actual cell which contains the one number you need. Right. So some of the goals which Metro applications set for themselves emphasize content at the expense of Chrome. So no bars, not a lot of buttons, no docking controls. Basically, half the controls which we're used to using are no longer there. And this is something that was very kind of surprising to me, as in we have to think differently. And how do we think differently? How do we take our Chrome-rich applications into this Chrome-less world? Number two, present content in a visually appealing way. As I mentioned, they do give us the templates for that. They do allow people such as myself, a humble developer who uses a red background for everything, to produce something that's visually appealing from using the template itself. It is shocking, and I've been shocked with what I've been able to do, because typically without the help of a visual designer, I wouldn't dare post any UI on my blog. We do get Metro applications which need to help us quickly navigate data and to quickly navigate the functionality that's exposed by these applications, and also to navigate this content, because Metro applications are all about content. Something I mentioned earlier, facilitate interaction with other applications. Metro applications, when you don't have a lot of Chrome, when you can't put all that functionality in, the only way you can enrich your application is to allow it to connect with other applications. So I think the metaphor they used is very powerful. Be good at one thing rather than mediocre at many. And many of the applications which we've all built, which I've personally built, they've all been driven by the users wanting more and more and more. And I want to have this button and that button and all the functionality is available at the same time. And here, you're forced to go down to the essentials, to the criticals. What's the one task that this application has to do? Great. And then to let it integrate with all the other applications to enhance that content and to share it and to process it in ways that this application didn't have in mind when it was initially built. Right, just a brief contrast between pre-Metro and Metro applications. Pre-Metro, keyboard, mouse operated, high data density, high Chrome, a lot of interactions, a lot of potential ways to process the data. And these primarily targeted data creation, data entry, and manipulation. While Metro applications, they're touch-oriented, they limit the operations you can perform on data simply by the amount of, by the limitation on the kind of controls you can have on your application at all. Because the template tells you, you have to start with the content. You can't clutter everything with Chrome. You can't use toolbars that are visible all the time. You can't use docking. You have to think in a way to simplify, to get to the base of what you're trying to do. And also, continuing the same thought, low data density, because nobody can really hunt for a number when they're walking down a hall and just want to check how they're doing on one critical KPI. So it's very important to keep the data density low. And I think that's going to be a challenge for all developers, because we're just used to exposing everything and then let the user deal with it. Right. Some of the capabilities which Metro adds, I'll just outline them briefly, as we've all probably seen the same videos. So just to kind of put things in context. Probably the solution to scroll, really, to me personally, is Semantic Zoom. And it's great they're giving us this capability, because I cannot imagine scrolling through the amount of data in a typical grid in a business application the same way on a mobile device. So Semantic Zoom basically lets you have two views of the same data. And it allows you, with a simple pinch gesture, to have a different template and to present a different UI, a UI of your choice, which then allows you to filter the initial data. So basically, we're decoupling data presentation from data navigation. Because when you have a grid in a standard forms-based or web-based application, you have the grid and the scroller. And you have both the navigation and the presentation of the records in the same view. Well, here, it's really difficult to do navigation when you have maybe 500 records. It's really tedious. It's really painful for me to go through all the contacts on my phone without using a shortcut like that. So with this, and by giving us the power to customize this any way we like, we're able to perform specialized tasks at different times in our application. So this is just about presentation, this is just about navigation. And this is great at navigation and gives you nothing in terms of presentation, and this is the other way around. And it's just an example of how we can use the limited screen space we get and to take advantage of the touch interaction to switch between these two modes and to be able to quickly find the data that we're looking for. Of course, this is probably the most basic navigation view. Something that I found interesting would be to, for example, have a heat map. For example, these are, shall we say, names of stocks. And here, they would be represented with squares that are of different size, depending on how often I've interacted with stocks from a particular industry. So in this way, I can put in some of that information into the navigation itself. And this isn't something we could do with the grid or with any other data presentation control we had before. Tiles. And probably the start screen was a big stretch for me. It's probably one of the biggest changes Microsoft has done by turning the start menu into a start screen. So it's no longer just a launcher for your applications, which are organized hierarchically and you look for them for ages. Finally, it's a dashboard at the end, which allows you to have up-to-date information from each and every application you have represented on there in the form of in the form of a tile on, you know, the last things you've performed there, or, you know, updated information in the application itself. For example, it's very easy to think of a scenario where you have a CRM system and leads keep coming in. And it's important for somebody to have the view on the amount of new leads coming in. And you can represent that in a tile very easily. And they can see how many items they need to take care of right from the start screen itself. So they do facilitate, at a glance, application status. And probably something that's very valuable, we do have push notifications, even when your app isn't running. So we're able to update the tile. This is actually, I'm sure you recognize this. This is the tile from the Stocks application in Windows 8. And it's just an example of how we can update these tiles. They can be like ambassadors of our application on the start screen, telling the user, there is something new you need to take care of. There is something new for you to examine. And this is very powerful because before that, business users would have to go to launch the entire application, to go in, to filter a grid, or to open a view to find out if there's anything new at all. So this is a big change, and it enables the kind of mobility scenarios, the rapid response, the kind of always-on application that all of us really want. I mean, all of us want our applications to be used, to be useful. So it's just an opportunity for us to expose that on the start screen. Search contracts. This is a very good capability I really liked when they introduced it. It basically enables the standard search facility within Windows and also any other application to search your application data. Because what happens right now is even though all the data in our applications is kept in a structured way, it's not accessible outside of it. And it's shocking how much time people lose going into an application just to look something up. I find myself looking for records, just launching applications just so I can find one record, so I can get one detail. And this is something that really helps us change this and to expose our structured data for the first time. Because if you think about it, the find facility of Windows, like the Windows key F, it's only good for text-based files. And, you know, if you're lucky, document files, Word documents. You know, all the rest of it, all your customer names, all of your product names, all of the stuff that you really care about as a business user is unreachable. So for the first time, we're given the tool to expose it. So that's something very valuable. And also, to share it. This is a screenshot of a CRM system that's fairly popular. And before that, if I am looking at this one customer, and if I want to share it with a colleague of mine, I'll have to take a screenshot. Or I'll have to send him an email saying, open CRM and look for, you know, such and such a name. And you'll find the person that you're looking for, or you'll find this lead that I was telling you about. And now we can do this in a much more powerful way. So we can move from this analog, you know, me telling somebody, look this up, and then them doing it on their own, or in Excel. It's too bad, actually, that we're forced to export to Excel all the time. Every time we talk about a grid control, the first question is, does it have export to Excel? And that's not surprising. It just reflects the fact that applications, and really the platform, it limited our choices so much on how we can share this data. So the first thing that a developer would think about when they have a grid to, you know, represent data in a database, they would be like, okay, how do I get this data out? Because I can't get it out in any other way. So Excel is the way. So for the first time, we're able to define search, share contracts, which can significantly cut down on instant messages saying, look this up, or Excel exports, which which really are performed manually. So this is a real opportunity for us to enable our users to share data much more effectively. And you can see the formats that can be shared: text, URIs, HTML, formatted text, developer-defined data, of course. So you can theoretically share anything. I think it's best to stay to the standard formats. Probably URIs and HTML would be useful, because in that way, you do not limit any consumers of your application later on, because you're implementing a contract, a sharing contract, and it's much better to share this data in some standard format so that many other applications can make use of it, rather than lock yourself in a custom solution and then require other applications to learn your protocol, to learn the structure of your data, just so they can consume it. So if we make it easier for them, more applications will consume the data from our own applications. SnapView, again, an example from that favorite CRM system. It's fairly small in size, the window itself, but the view doesn't change at all to reflect that. And the SnapView is something that Metro introduces that lets us handle that. It lets us provide a template for the application to render itself when it's docked to the side, when there's two applications visible, and when it needs to present an abbreviated view of its UI so that we don't get up, so that we don't end up with something like that. Right. Again, it enables us to produce a concise view of the app. It enables other applications to easily cross-reference data without leaving the main app, what they're working with. They'll be able to take a look at your data in your application in a really quick way. And it's important for us to enable that kind of interaction, because the market really expects it. And this is a tool that we can use to improve our applications. Right. Portrait view. Portrait views is basically the ability to provide a different template of the UI of our application when the user has turned the device up with the short edge up, if you will. So something that we've done a while ago is we've built a sample which changes its appearance when you turn the device. This is, of course, the Windows Phone, but you can easily see this as an example of this would be a normal view for a tablet. This would be the portrait view for a tablet. And it's just an example of how you can provide different templates and how you can even implement functionality. For example, in this case, when you're looking at the phone this way, you can only look at one stock at a time. And when you flip it horizontally, you compare them. So this is actually functionality that you're triggering simply by changing the orientation of the device. And it's one way we can take advantage of the portrait view. It's not just about presenting the same content in a different way, in a different template. It's about triggering actual functionality, just like here. So there's a lot of opportunity to kind of let the user perform tasks without really interacting, getting deep in the application. Because probably the simplest way to do this would be to just have a button, compare, right? And require them to press it. But that would be Chrome. That would be taking away their attention from the content itself. That would be taking valuable space from the screen itself, where we could present data in a more, in a way that users can understand easier. Right. So, what are the scenarios which port well to Metro? And what are the scenarios which don't? So, the scenarios that adapt well to the Metro UI and to the Metro basically enabled device are interruption rich. And we have to keep in mind the fact that we need to only present the important data in an easy to see manner, because chances are these users will be doing something else. And for them, this isn't the main priority. Unlike all the applications we've built so far, where you have a user sitting down at the computer, that's the only thing they're doing, they can't go anywhere, and we've got them, basically. And here, we don't. So we have to make it easy. We have to only present the important data. The second kind of criterion for scenarios which port well are touch-friendly. And probably the most valuable use of touch interactions is for data browsing, especially when you're dealing with data that's presented graphically. Because with touch, you get a great capability to zoom into data and to pan around the map and, you know, to zoom in and out of geographic areas or to zoom in and out of a chart. So these are the type of scenarios that port really well into Metro. Something else that's fairly important is to keep in mind that we have a very limited scope for manipulating data, because the fact is that the keyboard and the mouse are much more accurate as data manipulation devices than touch. Touch is very accessible, but it's not accurate. You make mistakes when you type, and you know it's difficult to click like a very small button, which is not a problem we have using the the full-size keyboard and the mouse. So it's important to keep that in mind and to kind of not get ahead of ourselves and assume that the user would be able to manipulate our data with the same precision that we expect them to, having used their having used our desktop or web-based applications. Oops. Probably the best scenarios in Metro, and these are basically all the scenarios which we saw at build, are data consumption scenarios. Because the applications we saw were about Twitter, a Twitter client, a social network client, a weather client, because these basically are applications which only integrate data from other sources and they present it to us. We didn't, obviously, nobody's going to port Visual Studio to this device. Well, I hope not. I hope I don't have to work with it. That's for one. So it's much more about content consumption rather than content creation. And it's much easier to consume content in a passive way when you can be interrupted frequently, when you have a non-high-precision input device, rather than to create content. So we need to keep in mind that data entry is difficult on these platforms, that we kind of have to try and enable developers, enable users really, to enter data, to give them shortcuts, to give autocomplete, spell check. I think spell check is now standard in Windows 8. They've clearly recognized that because it's, everybody knows that we all make mistakes when we type text messages for that one reason alone. So standards, it's difficult to define a standard for application scenarios which don't port well to Metro. And I do realize that, you know, obviously there would be exceptions to these. But I just try to understand, you know, the types of scenarios which would be ported with great difficulty. And we do have customers which require lots of data. All they want is data. They want to get rid of all the toolbars. They want to squeeze data everywhere because that's what users want, because users want Excel. That's their dream. They want Excel. They want to open an application and can I just have Excel? Can I have it work like Excel? Can I have it look like Excel? We're used to that. We're used to giving users what they want. high data density, numbers everywhere, controls everywhere, buttons everywhere. And these are the types of scenarios which don't port very well. And this will probably be one significant change that we need to make, that we need to keep in mind if we are to produce useful Metro UI applications. Also, scenarios which require a substantial amount of time or data to complete. For example, Visual Studio is one prime example. You wouldn't really like to be interrupted all the time when you're coding. It doesn't really make sense, does it? So if you plan to take a user through a workflow that's maybe 7 or 8 steps and to have them enter all sorts of parameters during this workflow, that's probably Metro is probably not the ideal platform for that. Because chances are they'll get a notification or they'll be in a place where they'll get interrupted or they'll want to check something out, different application on the same machine, and they'll lose the focus and they'll make a mistake. So for such scenarios, it's best to have them delegated to desktop-based applications. And the third one, I think I mentioned before, all scenarios requiring precision pointer and text entry devices. It's hard to imagine producing any graphics of decent quality, Photoshop, Illustrator-type quality on such a device. Because using your fingers, you don't have a lot of precision in the pointing device. And also, it's hard to imagine somebody writing a book on such a device just because they're going to make a lot of mistakes. And it's not the quickest way to do it. It may be convenient. They may have a few good ideas. They might type those down. But it's not something that I would expect somebody to volunteer to use such a device to type 10 pages. Right. So I thought I'd just mention some of the big differences from the applications we've built so far and the applications that are facilitated by Metro. And probably the biggest one is the application lifecycle. So the application lifecycle really is this, diagrammed in a very simple way. When we run the application, it's in its running state. When we focus away from it, when we open a different application, it goes into suspended. When we bring it back, it resumes. When it's suspended, if something happens, some application requests a lot of memory, it gets terminated. And we can run it again. And what's really shocking for a regular developer such as myself is to realize that if my application has been suspended for 5 precious seconds, it's gone. It's not there anymore. And 5 seconds is all we get. So this has huge implications. We can't run in the background anymore. We can't rely on the fact that our application is always active. We can't rely on the fact that it'll load quickly. We have to make sure that we use notifications to update the user with what's happening in the application. And we also have to make sure that we use the save and restore events to save and restore state and settings so we can bring them back to where they were, which isn't something we do in the current applications. I mean, currently, if you want to keep going where you are, you just need to keep running it. That's it. If you run it from scratch, chances are you'll start from the loading screen and you'll have to take it from there. So this is a big change that this Metro application pattern introduces. And also something that is very important, we need to incrementally save data because you never know when your application will be suspended or terminated. We need to make sure that we save all the data that the user has generated in our application. And the best way, probably, is to do that in the cloud. Because in this way, we'll be able to share this data and to make sure that if the user goes on a different device, logs in, that they can still continue where they were. And this is the great promise of mobility, really, of somebody being able to use our applications, go on a different machine, and continue where they were. And this is a big change because it's not something that we've been able to do before. It's true, people were able to save settings, to save the docking layout, to save, to persist all the filtering settings of the grids. But it's nowhere near being able to go to a different machine and have the application look just the same as the way you left it 2 days ago, let's say. Roaming state, this is basically what I just mentioned. We have to make sure that we serialize and load state every time the user saves or leaves the application, every time the application is suspended or resumed. And this will involve substantial changes to the applications which we have built currently, because somebody at some point would say, okay, on my mobile device, I made such and such a change, and I want to have it now reflected in the desktop version of the same application. Why doesn't it work? So Metro isn't just about producing new applications. It will also force us to change the logic, specifically the persistence, the data persistence logic of our existing applications, just so we can support the same scenarios. Okay, so now we'll go into outlining how we can port different types of scenarios from the old type of applications, basically pre-Metro applications, into Metro style of applications. And we'll take a look at navigation, manipulation, visualization, layout, and presentation of data, and consider the options we have for presenting those in the Metro world. So navigation specifically, Metro apps do feature powerful data navigation UI, something I mentioned earlier with the semantic zoom. Something else that's very important to keep in mind is that touch interface is more efficient than scrolling. My personal reflex right from the beginning would be to use, a regular grid, let them scroll, they'll find it. But that's the reflex that, I probably have to deal with, and that will eventually lead us to providing UI which leads users to interact with data, to navigate data with the semantic zoom, with all these jump views, which allow them to navigate data in a much more easier way. Something that's very important is to replace typing with touch interactions whenever possible, to take into account the fact that users don't have a keyboard in front of them anymore, and that just like with the jump view, it's much easier to interact with a simple tile which represents a certain letter or a certain class of records, for example, processed orders, unprocessed orders. That's probably the way to sort in Metro. If you have a lot of orders and you just want to see the ones that are unprocessed, it's much easier to split the screen in half, or probably with the share of orders you have. If, let's say, you have 10 processed and one unprocessed, it's semantically meaningful to represent the tile which represents the ones that are processed 10 times bigger than the other, and just to recognize what's important to the user. It doesn't have to be just the jump view. We can use also tree maps or timelines or diagrams for navigation. And we'll take a look at some of these examples. So let's say our items have a hierarchy. Let's say this is a view of the whole market, really. These are sectors of the economy grouped in industries. And you can see this is technology, this is consumer goods, and so on. So if you are, imagine needing to browse all of these leaf level, probably the smallest rectangles, imagine having to browse them in a list, in a simple grid. It provides no meaning on structure. And here we do have structure because they are grouped in categories. So probably the instinctive way, I started as a Windows Forms developer, I would have done this with a grid, a hierarchical grid. It would be beautiful. My users would love it. It wouldn't work here. It would actually be the worst choice here. And using a tree map such as this one in a useful way is basically the only way to enable anybody to find anything when we're presenting that much data. Something that's very important in this case is the coloring, because it adds another dimension to the data. It represents a different characteristic visually, and it's something that my hierarchical grid in my Windows Forms application wouldn't be able to represent, right? And here, specifically, I believe the coloring is the change in value over the course of the last day or so. So my user can immediately see not only the size of a specific sector, not only the where it falls in terms of its industry, how big is it relative to the industry, but also I would be able to include a real-time element to my application. I'll be able to represent the change that's happened just now or just yesterday with the coloring of the tiles. And in this way, I'll be able to significantly enhance the user's ability to find what they need quickly. Because otherwise, they would have to sort my grid to death. They would have to look and look which is the biggest change, and they would have to size it versus all the other change makers. Well, with this, they can immediately see where are the opportunities and where are the threats and act on those quickly. So that's just one way that the touch interaction model forces, well, it forced me, should force Metro developers to think about what's really important in this data to the user. And this is where making your application good at one thing rather than mediocre at many comes in, because you have to understand this one specific scenario and to come up with the specific attributes you can represent as colors in this case to convey what the user is looking for. A different way to navigate data is with a timeline. This is basically a control which represents events over time on an axis. And the very simple way to represent all of these events, this is actually ancient history, probably something relevant would be incidents in a network or on a server. And probably the easiest way to represent those, and also the way that some standard server monitoring tools present these, is with a grid. And they don't let us see the clustering of different events. They don't represent the chronological aspect of this data. And using this control, and again, it's the limitations of the platform which make it impossible for us to give the user too much. And it is, again, the limitations of the platform which force us to identify what's most important. And in this case, what's most important is the chronological aspect. Let's say the user is looking for clusterings in different events. Let's say they want to see whether every time there is one of the green events, we get a red event right before that. And that's not the kind of clue into the data that you would get if you represent those in a grid, because the grid wouldn't really represent the spacing between the different events. The grid would just represent those as simple values, and we would have to struggle to think and identify values which are close to get an idea of how clustered that data is. Right. Data manipulation. As I mentioned earlier, it's really hard to do sophisticated data manipulation on these devices, and it's really good to keep in mind that these type of capabilities are very limited. So I think it's a good guideline to avoid manipulations which require a lot of input or which entail long running operations. Again, because the user may be interrupted because, you know, suddenly they might get a different idea or somebody might talk to them in the corridor. If and when we need these users to complete tasks, we can always give them presets. This is what you used last time. This is what other people are using. This is, you know, how other people are performing this task. This is a preset that you can use to minimize the amount of manipulation, data entry, and just the time they spend making a task a reality. Or something else we can do in this case is we've made a decision. We want this record processed or this data manipulated in such and such a way. We can just delegate that to a desktop-based user. Basically, we can have a separate store for tasks which have to be completed on a client which has rich interaction capabilities, such as the keyboard and the mouse. Basically, this is just like email flagging. I will look at this later when I have more time, when I'm at the right device. It's one way to kind of separate the wheat from the chaff and to kind of make it easy for your user to make a decision without forcing them to go through a long task or to enter a lot of data in there. Menus and toolbars don't really port to the touch metaphors. That's too bad, because I've always used menus and toolbars in all the applications I build. So suddenly, again, the platform forces us to think, what are the key manipulations? What are the key interactions? What are the key tasks? And to only add those in the app bar. And the app bar is really a contextual ribbon. You know, the ribbon when you, just like in Word, when you click in a table, you get a new tab in the ribbon, the contextual tab, which lists all the operations you can perform on a table. And when you've clicked away from the table, that tab basically disappears. So we can have the same thing here. And this is one way we can have the best of two worlds. Because with menus and toolbars, they were blind to what was happening in the application. Because the toolbar always contained the same buttons, regardless of the state of the application. And here, the constraint of the size of the device and of the number of tools we can fit on it forces us to think, okay, is this relevant at this state in the application? And only include in the app bar the operations which are relevant for the current state. So in this way, we can kind of squeeze in a lot more functionality through the back door, which is probably the bad thing to do, but it's the first instinct that anybody would have. And a user really wouldn't feel the pain of having, you know, an extra toolbar up there, just because we would be presenting all the operations only when the user actually finds them relevant. And this is something that the app bar really enables us to do in a really powerful way. Something that the ribbon started, but the app bar takes to another level. Because with the ribbon, we could still have all the space we wanted, right? You could have as many tabs as you like. You didn't have to make them contextual. And here, just to make sure that you cope with the device, with the limitations of the device, you have to represent those in a very concise way. And you have to represent only the ones which make sense for a user to not feel overwhelmed. Right, data visualization. Something I mentioned before, Metro is the perfect platform for content consumption. It was basically the focus of all the samples we saw Microsoft demonstrate at the conference. And content consumption is much easier when we actually visualize the content. And this was actually one of the promises of WPF, and actually the reason why data visualization made such a progress in applications users used when WPF became available, because for the first time, users had the ability to zoom into data with ease in a way they weren't able to do that in Windows Forms and ASP-based applications. And this is where it's even easier, because you have the touch interaction, because you can zoom in data in a much easier way. So Metro is going to be great for dashboards. And actually, all of the applications we saw at Build, they were dashboards, because the social client is a dashboard, what's going on with your friends. Twitter is a dashboard, what's going on in Twitter. The weather is really a dashboard. So it's quite natural to have dashboard scenarios in Metro for every, I shouldn't say for every, but for applications over time, it would be quite natural to expect that the first scenario that would make it into the Metro world is the dashboard. So when we do build dashboards, of course, same guidelines apply. Emphasize the important data, avoid dense visualizations. And again, we have to try and figure out what makes sense to the user. The snap view, again, it's a great opportunity to reformat data differently, to visualize it when the space isn't enough to represent it completely. And layout as well. Sophisticated layout isn't available in Metro. It's just a bad idea. So for example, if somebody tries to port their rich docking-enabled layout application, it wouldn't make any sense, right? Because they wouldn't be able to get the real estate to present anything meaningful in the limited area possible. And the user would find it really painful to move all these panes around and try and figure out how one snaps into the other. So it's best to represent these controls concisely and just when needed for the task to be completed. So for example, with docking, the idea behind docking was so a business user can have many things they need to complete the task at hand. It's just like Visual Studio. I want to take a look at my server. I want to take a look at my files, the properties of what I'm looking at. And this is very important for me to accomplish the one task I'm doing right now, which is writing code. And I need to know, which class I need to reference. I need to know which are the properties of the object I'm working with right now. And these are the type of rich content creation scenarios which don't make it very well in the Metro world. And this is why looking at many things at once would be really hard in Metro. And actually, the only way they're allowing us to do that is with the snap view, when you can have one application and another application at the same time. And this is something that's very important, because my natural impulse would be to say, okay, a user needs to have a look at this and this and this to complete this task. Why can't I have it all in there? So there's a lot more in terms of user discovery, user needs discovery, and interaction modeling that needs to be done to enable developers to produce something that's actually usable. And to break down sophisticated layout scenarios into simpler ones. Because you have to know what makes sense and what doesn't to the user to be able to split these scenarios where everything is available right on top. I've seen applications which run on 6 monitors, and they love it. And that's the only way they would work, right? And they use a docking metaphor, and they just load data, and they start throwing it out on all the different screens, and they just want to be surrounded by data, because when they make their decision, they want to have everything right on top, screaming at them, all in colors, all flashing. That's very far from the Metro world. So all these layout metaphors, which allowed us to bring everything to the front at the same time, docking is maybe the best example. This way of interacting is totally absent from this platform. Data presentation, present records as tiles. This is something we've seen at the presentations using the grid control. It's fairly standard. They give us good templates for that. Again, it's very important to talk to the user to find out what makes sense to have on this small amount of real estate I get in this tile, because currently we get a data set from the table, and you know, we bind it to the grid. Whether a user is using just 5 or 6 columns out of the 50, that's fine. That's up for them to figure out and to customize. We give them the column chooser. You do the hard work. I'm not going to ask you how you use your application. Here's all the data that I can get for you. You go ahead and, you know, take your time to customize your view. Well, here, you can't really create a tile, a meaningful tile, without knowing what the user cares about. And this is where it's not just developers. We'll need to get a lot more insight into what are users actually doing with these applications and what makes sense to them. Right. Scenarios which don't really live well in Metro, as I mentioned earlier. The docking example is probably... I've probably beat that one to death already. Again, something else which doesn't port really well: extensive data entry, precision point device entry, and also long workflows which take a while, which you know, are easy to become interrupted by, you know, somebody coming into the room, somebody talking to our user, or something else happening. So, how do we take a very simple business application into Metro? A case study. This is the application. It's an application I wrote in WPF. It's a very simple application. It has a lot of data. It's not very functional for the average user, but for the user who really cares about it, they really get what they wanted. So it has just a few grids showing different types of data, and we have a charting view. So, just to give you an idea of what it looks like, this is it. It's fairly customizable. We can move things around. We can maximize and minimize. And we can interact with it in a fairly rich way. We can change the active tile. And that's pretty much it. Right. So, layout. Obviously, the tile control, the control which we use to move things around, it's not going to make it in Metro. It doesn't make sense because it's too much Chrome. It has a title bar. The user just wants the one piece of the one view that they want to interact with. They don't want to see all the views at the same time. So we'll replace the tile manager with a tab control containing the different view names. And the user would just have to go through the different ones by swiping across the screen. Right, so that was easy. The second one is this grid I have showing all this. I believe it's about 2,000 rows in there. So I'll have to represent that with tiles. So what makes sense to a user out of all the columns I have represented here? And I have to go to the user and ask them, if I can only show you 2 columns of this row, which ones would they be? Which ones do you care about? So let's say I've come up with this great idea and I know they just need those 3. And then I'll create my grid. It's composed of tiles. It's great. It's beautiful. It might even do the flashing, which happens here, depending on the changes. But how do they navigate it? We'll use the semantic zoom because we don't really want them to scroll, because that would take too much time, and they would say, your application doesn't really help me. It's much slower than my other desktop application. So we would use the desktop, the semantic zoom to use a jump list to enable them to navigate the data easily. We have a small grid representing all the transactions we've made over time. This is basically the history. So what we'll do here is we'll use a timeline to represent the clustering over time of different transactions. And of course, if they'd like to take a view of all of these details, they can just touch one of these tiles and they'll get all the information they ever wanted to find out about this one particular event. But in this very general navigation-oriented view, we're not giving them everything. We're just telling them, at such and such a time, this happened. And we can only tell them a limited amount of things about that. We can't tell them everything, just because the space is limited. And again, this may not even make sense. You might have people who are not interested in the clustering. They just want to find out whether they've traded a particular stock. They don't care when. So I might be making a completely incorrect assumption about my user here. So that's why it's important to find out what they need to give them the type of navigation which suits their workflow in the best way. Right. The third view that we'll kind of try and migrate is the portfolio view. Basically, this is a very brief grid listing the current trades I've made, you know, the stocks I hope to make money on. Unfortunately, I'm doing pretty bad there. It's random data, so I don't take it too hard on my abilities. So what I, as a user, would like to find out is not just, okay, here's the list, scroll it. I want to see my portfolio visualized in a way to tell me, if something moves, where can I lose the most? And in this way, probably the best way to visualize that is with a tree map control. The control which we saw earlier, this one. So let's say I've invested the most in this particular sector, and by making it bigger, it's just easier for me to watch it because I have a lot in there, and if something moves, it's dangerous. So it's much easier for me to interact with it that way. And of course, we'll have the semantic zoom, and we'll be able to navigate all this data, switching between the tree map and the grid view, which represents the tiles representing the investments I've made. Also, of course, we'll have a context menu on each of these tiles to allow me to watch a particular stock I've invested in the charting view. And my charting view looks like this. This is great to port into Metro because everything is big. This is big, easy to hit. This is easy to navigate with touch interaction. So nothing much for me to do here. And actually, when Windows Phone first came out, we've actually ported this view to this. And you can even see that it's the exact same functionality. It's the same details shown here. It's the same two charts. It's the same time period picker. It's basically the same functionality because it's a data visualization scenario, and it's easy. It doesn't have rows. It doesn't have Chrome. So it's easy to port these scenarios into these touch-enabled platforms. And it's actually much easier to interact with data this way than with the keyboard and the mouse, because the keyboard is useless here, right? So the only thing you need is the mouse. And you can imagine, you know, you're going to be switching the pointer place from here, going from one stock to another, to here all the time. Zoom in, go out, switch the stock. Well, when you're holding this device, it's much simpler to do this, you know, with your hands. Right. We also have a tree map view. Obviously, that will port right into my Metro application because it's easy to work with. Some of you may be asking yourself, okay, but how are you going to click this one? That's easy. We can implement drill down. Let's say I'll click here, and then this will get expanded into the whole area. and I could implement drilling up by press and hold. So in this way, I'll be able to allow users to interact with data which represent a very small amount of the total. So this is why this one would port very nicely, because it is visual. It doesn't have a lot of Chrome. It's not high density. It's not as high density as a grid, for example. Right. Some of the extensions I'd like to make to my sample with the tools that Metro gives me are the following. I'll implement a sharing contract to share stocks in the chart. Let's say I've come across something interesting, something that a friend of mine might benefit from, somebody who's invested a lot in a particular stock, and I see something that's really happening there and I want to share it with them. And instead of sending them an email or calling them on the phone and telling them, you need to see what's happening, open this and this view, I'll be able to share it immediately. So this is one way to extend this application in a very powerful way. Search. It'd be much easier to find out what my exposure is to a particular stock, or if something's changing right from the search charm in Windows, rather than launch the application and go through all the different steps to get to where I want to be. And the search capability will basically expose this feature of my application to anybody. So it becomes available at any time with any application I use. Let's say I'm looking at the weather. I'd like to immediately take a look at, how a particular stock is doing, rather than starting, from the back forward, as in open the application, find the view, modify it to let me see what I want to see. I'll start from the other end. This is what I want to see. You go and get it for me. And this is a very powerful way of cutting down the time a user spends navigating the application. Something else I'll do, of course, I'll save all the stocks open in chart view so that when I go home and I open my home PC, I still see them. When I take a different device, someone else's device perhaps, I log into my account, I can still see the same state of the application. Also, I'll add a tile to represent my application on the dashboard, on the start dashboard. They might want to rename that from the start screen to the start dashboard. And I will update the status of this tile to alert me every time something's happening. Let's say a major change in, a stock that I've invested in significantly is happening, and I want to find out about it right on the dashboard. So that's one way to implement it. Even when my application isn't running, this is the powerful bit. Right. New factors in Metro application development. Something that really becomes very evident when I was thinking about all these applications and I was trying to understand what this means for a regular developer such as myself is the importance of visual assets. If I don't come up with a great tile, chances are people aren't really going to use my application unless they're paid to do it. Or if I don't have great icons in my application and I just have to rely on text the way we always have in the Chrome-rich world, again, it would be hard for them to use. They would say, this application, it's slow, it's not working, it's not very useful, we should get a different one. So if I'm ever to have a chance, I should really pay attention to visual assets and styling, because the fact of the matter is users have very different expectations having been exposed to all of the standard applications you find on the Metro, on the Windows 8 platform. They would expect the same in our applications, in my applications, and I would have to compete. I would have to make sure that I have a good tile. I would have to make sure that I have good icons, meaningful icons, good styling, just to be on top of it, just to be competitive. Interaction design, and this is something that came out in on multiple places in the scenarios, I believe. It's very important to find out what's the minimum set of data, controls, and steps to complete a certain task. Because the instinct from all the applications we've built so far is bring everything to the top, make it easy for everybody to see everything, even if they use only a quarter of it. Now, we have to make sure that our applications are good at one thing, and to find out what's this one thing. And these will be the decisions that are the hardest to make, because it's easy to add, but it's hard to cut, because you're letting go of functionality, which isn't something that we've had to do very often. And of course, we need to build the UI to complete these tasks efficiently. That's probably the biggest challenge, because we know how to build applications. It's just that this platform is so radically different, and we lack not only, up until now, we've lacked the controls and the way of thinking to allow us to navigate data efficiently, to present data efficiently, to take into account the orientation of the device, to take into account the fact that our users may be doing something else, and that we can't force them to enter text box after text box after text box of text. So this would be something critical to the success of a Metro application, in addition to visual design. Knowing what your application has to be good at and sticking to it. Because when you start adding functionality, when you start adding too much, the user would get distracted and they would go for a different application which does that one thing that they really cared about. So putting it all together, Metro is a platform which for the first time allows us to target mobile users using touch interaction. And it's a big change in what we do, because it forces us to think in a very different way, because real estate on these devices is scarce and we have to choose not so much what to add, but what to get rid of from our typical applications. So porting a business application to Metro needs to keep into consideration the Metro limitations, strengths, weaknesses, to fully take advantage of the strengths and to negate the weaknesses. Because it's very easy to kind of do this, write a Metro application using the thinking we used to write all these other applications. And that's probably the most shortest way, that's probably the shortest way to creating a really bad Metro application. And yes, Metro UI requires visual assets and a detailed understanding of the workflows to create something that's visually appealing, to create something that's usable. And when we make our applications, our existing applications, which are desktop-based, which are web-based, which are basically relying on the fact that users sitting down using a keyboard and a mouse, when we're able to take those into Metro to basically enable users to consume and manipulate the data on the go, that would enable us to really prove that we're able to continue increasing the productivity of the user, that we're able to take them beyond what we've gotten up to this point. Thank you. Just to make a small announcement, we'll be holding a free seminar next week here in the Netherlands, right here in Houten, I believe it's pronounced. It's on the February 23rd, so that's a week from now, next Thursday. It's in the afternoon, so that's just for your information if you're interested in learning more about Infragistics products and how to use them better.